everybody, and welcome back to the Improved Photography Podcast, your weekly dose of photography knowledge. Today you are joined by thousands of photographers from all around the world, all here ready to learn photography. Some of us are professional photographers, others are hobbyists or moms and dads who just want to take better pictures of the kids. There's something for everybody, but I am joined, as always now, by Darren Meller. Darren, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Jim, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I'm excited for the episode. Today we're going to talk about just a lot of things that's going around the Improved Photography website and things that are happening on our in the community. And so I'm anxious to get started.
Awesome. And the first thing that I'd really like to talk about is what we're going to do once a month is have the community do a photo contest. And we want to make sure it's a photo contest where you have a subject that you can photograph in your area. So if I said photograph a sunny sky in Seattle, that might be a little bit harder for some of the other people who live up there. So this month, the photo contest that we will be doing will be a night photography exposure of a structure. And we'll have two categories where we select the two best photos, best composition, and also the best post-processing.
Very cool. Well, I'm excited for that. We have not done enough photo contests, especially recently. We haven't done just nearly as many as we used to. So I'm excited to see everybody's entries.
Yes, and we want to do something a little bit different here. Facebook has been really great to the Improved Photography community, so we do ask that you post your photo entries on the Google Plus page for Improved Photography.
Yeah, so we definitely do a lot with Facebook, but the comment, the way that on Facebook that you submit photos, they just always get lost. It's hard to find the posts that people put on there, just the way that Facebook has it organized. And Google Plus is just a lot better for this. Even if you don't use Google Plus regularly, it's not a big deal. You can just go in and post it to our group. We're going to have directions on how to post your photos to the Improved Photography Facebook group on Google Plus by going to improvephotography.com/Google Plus. That's write out Google Plus and it'll get you there. improvephotography.com/Google Plus, and I'll have directions there on how to do it. If you already have a Gmail account, you already have a Google Plus account. If you have anything signed into Google, a YouTube account, anything, you already have a Google Plus account. So you'll just be able to submit it, and I'll show you how to do that step by step.
And do you want to tell them about the fantastic prizes we'll be doing for the best composition and best post-production, Jim?
Why, yes, I do. For the top three winners in the contest, we're going to give three winners. We're going to give a portfolio review that Darren and I are going to do. So we'll spend a little bit of time looking through all of your photos. And, you know, we can look through a website if you have it and give you some critique, advice, and suggestions and things that we really like about your photography. So I think it'll be a pretty cool prize, because that's something that a lot of photographers want, is feedback on their work. And so we're going to give that. Also, to one random person who enters, we're going to give one online photography class from us at photoclasses.com.
That sounds like an amazing deal. I'm excited for everyone who enters, and I can't wait to see the photos.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty cool. Like, you know, even if you aren't the best, one random person's going to get a class. So, like, there's something for everybody. even if you feel like it's hopeless to win, still enter, because we'll take a look at all the photos and make lots of comments on the ones that are submitted. And one person is going to get a class.
Exactly. And what made me think of this is we have this really neat article on the Improved Photography website. It's 11 essential tips for shooting night landscapes. And it's actually written by a contributor named Rusty. Rusty Parkhurst wrote a really amazing article with 11 tips on how to do landscape photography at night, and it's an extremely helpful article. I actually used it recently when photographing the Milky Way.
Yeah, we have a lot of resources on Improved Photography now for night photography. I think it's a cool area of photography because it really takes different skills than anything else. You know, you can know how to shoot a great landscape and know how to compose really well, but it's still just different at night because there's a lot more technical stuff to figure out how to get this sharp, you know, with a long exposure, how to focus correctly, how to get the noise down as much as possible. There's just a lot to learn. So it's kind of a fun area of photography to work on.
It's fun, and it tests your patience too. I think that it takes a lot of patience and tenacity, and also I think it's really going to be good for the insect repellent manufacturers out there, because we'll all be out there in the summertime trying not to get bit up as we're taking beautiful pictures at night.
Yeah, that's for sure. Sometimes they can be pretty bad.
All right, next on the docket, speaking of these beautiful night shots, I really want to discuss someone who has been on the show. He was back on the show in January of this year, and his name is Michael Fry. He actually did a really neat workshop called the Starry Skies Adventure, and that was over the last weekend, and he did it at Yosemite. And his work really, if you want some inspiration on what some great night photography looks like, I would definitely take a look at Michael Fry's website, which we'll list in the show notes as well. He's just always been an amazing and inspiring photographer as well. And him and Rusty, if you look at both of those, I think that you're going to be really eager to participate in this contest.
Yeah, he has great stuff. Another one that I might point you to is Jim Goldstein. He does really cool stuff. He's the marketing guy for Barra Lenses, and he's somebody that I've had some contact with, and I'm going to be getting him on the podcast here pretty shortly. But he just has really incredible night photos. They're just technically perfect, perfect sharpness. And what I really like about his work that I don't see a lot from other photographers is having a starry sky, but still a tiny bit of color in some of the clouds. And that's just really, really cool. Color from the sunset that's still there with the starry sky sunset, with the starry sky at night. It just looks so cool.
Awesome. And does he do that in one single exposure, or is he stacking images on that? Do you know?
I'm not totally sure. It really could be done both ways. If I were doing it, I would probably do it in two different exposures. It seems like they would just be easier because then you could just use the blending modes in Photoshop with the layers and put them on there pretty quickly. But I'm not sure how he's doing it, what his method is. But he posts a lot of it on Google Plus and on his blog and stuff like that. So he has a lot of resources you could find out from.
Oh, excellent. That seems like an amazing idea, and I think that it would be great to have him on the show and have his advice, because you put two heads together and you always come out with a great result.
Yeah, that's for sure.
And also, speaking of some great night photography, on photoclasses.com, there's one student that stood out this past month. He goes by Mike, and he's been doing some amazing shots in the San Clemente area. And for those of you who are not familiar with San Clemente, it's just south of Los Angeles and north of San Diego. It has some really beautiful photos in there. And Mike's been submitting some photos in the photo reviews and critiques that we do on photoclasses.com, and I've been nothing short of impressed. For the first time ever, I have seen in metadata when looking at it in Lightroom, a 602-second exposure, and that blew my mind. Have you ever done one that long, Jim?
Yeah, I have done some really long exposure, over an hour, in fact. I've done exposures well over an hour, but a lot of it's just experimentation to see what's going to happen. But yeah, it doesn't happen very often. In fact, almost all the night photography that I do, I don't know if I can say almost all, a lot of the night photography I do is under 30 seconds. In fact, even when I'm doing night photography, a lot of times I won't even bring the cable release that's required to go over 30 seconds, because you can just do so much in 30 seconds when you have really high ISOs. But every once in a while, yeah, I'll go to those really long exposures.
I keep mine under 30 seconds as well, but I'm a huge fan of the cable release, and I also use the EOS app on my phone. Sometimes I mess around with using the timer on the camera, but I think my best results come from the cable release, but I think that's just personal preference.
Can you use the EOS app on your phone to go over 30 seconds?
No, it restricts you to a 30-second exposure on that,
Ah, oh, that
so.
is a bummer. Why do they do that to us? I will never understand why they don't just type in the code of the camera, go more than 30 seconds, like put 60, 90, 5 minutes, just like why? Ah, it just drives me crazy why they don't do that.
And if there's any app developers out there in the improved photography community, that would be a great thing to make, is a program that you can control any type of camera. If you can somehow get in with Nikon, Canon, Sony, any of them, to allow those really long exposures, you'd have my buck.
Oh man, and there are great devices coming out, a lot of devices, but when the day comes that it when Wi-Fi works how it really should work on our cameras, where you can just have full control over the camera with your phone, it'll show you a live view on your phone, and that when you get home from the shoot, it connects to your home Wi-Fi and just downloads your pictures to your computer. Now we're talking. That's what I call Wi-Fi in a camera. Until then, they just toy with this Wi-Fi that it's just not what you would expect it to do. Because if it has Wi-Fi, we can do that stuff. So let's see it. That's how I always feel.
I feel the same way. I wish there was a streamlining approach. I do have to give some congratulations to the EOS app, whoever developed that on the Canon team. They did an amazing job to where you can control your ISO. You can't go over the 30-second exposure, incidentally, but you can control everything and actually see how adjusting your f-stop, adjusting anything else in camera is affecting your picture. So I think that that's really an amazing step. So I think we're getting a little closer.
So is it giving you a depth of field preview then?
It is giving you almost, it's really hard to tell on an iPhone screen. I love my iPhone, but I think the screen's a little bit too small to get a depth of field preview, but it definitely will show you what the lighting is going to be changing when changing, you know, your shutter speed and changing your aperture for allowing more light in.
So when you change the shutter speed on the app, you're seeing a brighter picture, is that right?
Yes, I'm seeing it almost instantaneously, and I actually did a fireworks photo shoot with a cable release in my right hand and the EOS app in my left, and I was able to get better photos with the EOS app because I was realizing I was overexposing the finale.
That's interesting. So they're just guessing what the resulting photo is going to look like, or I guess it's kind of an electronic shutter then. Because it's not clicking the shutter to show you that, right?
No, it's not clicking the shutter. And if you do use mirror lock, which I know you're not a fan of, it will actually act like a cable release that you would have plugged into the side of your camera. So there are some pretty deep controls in there, which brings back to the question, why are they not allowing us to go over 30 seconds on an exposure?
Huh, that's pretty neat and interesting. That's cool that they're doing that. I didn't realize it worked that way. I haven't played yet with the EOS app, so... That's good to hear.
Yeah, it's a fun one. I would definitely suggest it. And if Nikon doesn't have one that's similar that you know of, they need to catch up because they're always competing on who's going to outdo the next one.
Yeah, Nikon D810, no Wi-Fi.
Really? Wow. That surprises me.
Drives me crazy. I mean, especially because I know, like, if your iPad Wi-Fi breaks or something like that, like what happened to me is last year my iPad broke, the screen broke. And that happens when you have kids. The screen broke. And so you can buy just a replacement kit, you know, online for $20 to get a screen for an iPad. So I replaced it. But when I did, I nicked the Wi-Fi antenna and I busted it. And so you can buy a Wi-Fi antenna for like $10, $5 online. And you just put it in there. So a little Wi-Fi antenna is not an expensive device. So adding a little Wi-Fi antenna to your Nikon, to your Canon, this is not, you know, a significant increase in the build cost of the camera. The problem is they're just not putting the resources toward building that.
Yeah, and as you said yesterday, it's kind of amazing how they're picking and choosing which $5 or $10 part they're going to put in the camera. Like when we were speculating on the D750 and the Nikon or the Canon 7D Mark II, we're wondering whether they're going to put these in there, and it's really kind of interesting to think about the psychology that goes behind, well, do we want to throw this $5 part in or do we want to make them wait for the 7D Mark III?
Right, because I think, like, which photographer would not pay $5 to get the Wi-Fi and GPS in there? Who would not pay for that, right? If you're already spending hundreds of dollars on a camera, of course I would spend $5 extra to get the Wi-Fi, right?
Exactly.
It's interesting.
It is.
But before we go on, let's take just a minute and thank our sponsors. Fracture is a sponsor of the Improved Photography Podcast. I've told you about Fracture before, and they just do a really neat job. It's a unique way to present your photos. It's, you know, on glass. It just looks great in that color, and they make a variety of sizes. I would really lean towards the bigger ones. I don't like the small photos around. I guess you could use it, you know, on a desk or something like that, but I like the big ones. They have their classic size, which is the one that I have on the wall behind me, and it just fits perfect for that bookcase size, and it just looks really cool. In fact, I'll take a picture of it. I'll take a picture of the picture on the bookcase and put it in the show notes so you can see, hopefully get a little bit of a feeling of how that looks. It's pretty cool. So be sure to go to improvephotography.com/79 and I'll have that picture. Also a link to fractureme.com. And if you enter offer code photosonglass15, that's all one word, you'll get 15% off your order. And we thank Fracture for their support of the podcast.
Also, we'd like to thank Extrasensory Devices. Extrasensory Devices has come up with a really cool new product. It's called the Luxie. It's the first light meter for everybody. The Luxie clips on your iPhone and turns it into a highly accurate incident light meter. Luxie takes way more accurate readings than any spot meter on your camera can, because like all incident light meters, it measures the ambient light striking your subject instead of just averaging the light directly in the scene. It's just as effective as standalone light meters, but a tiny fraction of the cost. Tiny enough to carry with you all the time, and it's compatible from the iPhone 4 all the way to the 5S. Get 15% off at esddevices.com with coupon code IMPROVE. Please check out the show notes for more information on this as well.
Yeah, that looks like a pretty cool product. I don't often use a light meter, but when it's something on my iPhone, now we're talking. That's pretty cool. Like, it's just not something that I would carry around and add that complexity. But it's so cool that you can have just all the kinds of tools like that with you on your iPhone, so that when the situation does arise, you know, or if you're a photographer that likes using a light meter all the time, boom, it's right there on an app. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, they had me sold as soon as they mentioned the word iPhone, so I'm eager to give it a shot.
Yeah, if it was just a regular light meter, I'd say, yeah, probably not. But on the iPhone, yeah, that's cool. I want to do that.
Yeah, it sounds amazing. And speaking of cool things, how is your lens finder project coming?
Okay, it has been a ton of work. I've mentioned this on a couple episodes. I'm probably driving a couple of you nuts with me teasing it, but it's just been a huge project. So let me give you a rundown of what we're working on, and I'll give you some more details of what it's going to be and what we're creating. So a couple months ago, I was answering questions from students in online classes, and you know, something like 70% of the questions on that particular day were about lenses. Do I have the right lens? What lens should I buy? That kind of thing. And I look at the questions that we get here on the podcast, and a lot of them are, you know, I'm shooting low light sports on my Canon 60, and I don't want to spend more than $1,000. What lens do I buy? And if I can ask you four or five questions and get that kind of information, I can get you to the right lens, you know. But the problem is that not everybody has somebody that you can talk to, and you know, somebody who really knows lenses, and you can talk about it and get to the right lens. And so I see mistakes all the time where, you know, people are spending $1,000 on a lens. That's a ton of money, and it ends up, it's just the wrong lens. You know, you bought a lens that doesn't have a focus motor, and neither does your camera, and it's just not going to work. Or if it does work, sometimes I'll look at a lens and I think, oh boy, you could have spent a whole lot less money and got a better lens if you would have got, you know, maybe this lens that's actually an older lens, but it's just sharper and better because it's an older lens. Or, you know, endless kind of situations. And so all the time I see photographers who just, I mean, it's not even arguable. It's just the wrong lens. They just didn't quite get there. And it's really unfortunate. And the camera manufacturers, the lens manufacturers, do not make this easy on you. I mean, there are over 1,000 current lenses that you could choose from that are still available. Some older, some current models, but that are currently available. There are over 1,000 lenses you can choose from. And of course, you don't know all 1,000 lenses and all, you know, what's good, what's bad. And so it's almost impossible to pick the lens. And if you're a newer photographer, you see a name like 70-200 f2.8, you know, VC, IS, DX, FG, who knows what, a whole bunch of letters. And you're just like, what lens do I get? It really is kind of a pain. And so what I'm doing is putting together a lens finder that we're affectionately going to call the Lens Nerd. I call it the Lens Nerd because I've talked to all of my friends and contacts in the photo industry. I've talked to the very best photographers on planet Earth. I mean, dozens and dozens of them, from, you know, everybody. You pick a name. This is the who's who of photography. And basically what I did is I wrote all the different situations that you could be in possibly for buying a lens, well over 100 of them. You know, I want a full frame Canon camera that shoots sports, has a fast aperture for indoors, and I only have $1,500 to spend, you know, like really specific situations. And I just asked them. I wrote down what my recommendations are for all of those, and then I sent it out to Juan Pons, who's an incredible wildlife photographer, and I sent it to Martin Bailey, who's another incredible wildlife photographer, and they both shoot Canon. And I said, okay, so somebody shoots full-frame Canon, what lens do you recommend? And then I compared their results to mine, and we argued some of these out to make sure we got to the right lens. And so it's going to be incredible, because you can just go to the website, say, you know, it'll ask you five or six questions about what gear you have and what you're looking for, and you can just download the photography brains of the best photographers in the world and get to the right lens in no time, whether you're going to rent it, buy it, whatever. It's going to be awesome. I'm so excited about it.
I'm really excited for it too. And what better of a source of information could you get than this? I mean, if you go to a camera store and you're looking for a lens, they're not going to sell you last year's lens. They're going to try to push the newer one on you, even though last year's could have some benefits to it. I'm really excited for this. And this is where I'm personally going to find my next lens as well, because it's such a big decision. And like you said, you don't want to be strapped with a $1,000 lens that isn't going to meet your needs.
Yeah, right. And there's also just so much to consider. Like if you're buying a lens, you know, you may look at the Canon 100-400, you read a million reviews, and then you go buy it, and then later you realize that, oh, Canon's actually planning on updating that in a couple months. Well, how are you supposed to know that, right? Like, how do you know that stuff? So we're going to work on keeping the lens finder continuously updated so that you don't you don't get caught. So it's going to be really, really cool. I'm sure you're all wondering the timeline. I don't want to give myself too early of a date, but right now I'm saying October 1st, it will be ready for you. I'm hoping to get a little bit sooner, but I want to make sure that this project is done right. Because it's a big decision. I mean, it's a lot of photographers in the improved photography community spending thousands of dollars on lenses, and I don't want you to waste your money. Photography is expensive. I want to make sure you get the right lens. So it's going to be cool. Another thing that I like about it is you mentioned going to the camera store, Darren. The problem with the camera store is they get different commissions based on different brands. You know, different brands will give them a different price point for a lens, and then they can mark it up a lot. Some products are going to have a lot more markup than other products that really don't have a whole lot of markup. That's why when I see people buying a tripod at the camera store, they always walk out with the ProMaster every time. The ProMasters that I have tested, I haven't tested them all, are junk. They just are not as good as you can spend the same money and get a better tripod from an Enduro, a Faisal, or something like that. But you go to the camera store and they're giving you advice, but it's a lot based on what kind of commission they're going to get, what kind of markup they have on the product. On Improved Photography, we do an affiliate deal with Amazon, but it doesn't matter what lens we recommend. We get the same 4% no matter what we do. And that's just, you know, I've spent literally 2 months on just this project on the lens finder, getting everything organized, and the technology has been crazy trying to figure this out. Like, it's a lot. And so, the affiliate commissions really help us. That's what makes it possible. And it doesn't cost you anything extra at all at Amazon. But I like that we work that way, that since we aren't selling the stuff and we just get that same percentage, it means we can give really, truly unbiased reviews.
And unbiased is what we're looking for. I mean, the commissions, I should have known that. I used to work in retail when I was younger, and I actually walked out of the camera store before heading over to Europe with a ProMaster gimbal head. And guess how many times I've used it? About once.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Well, and it's true no matter where you go. I mean, everybody wants a cut. You go to a restaurant and you say, what meal do you recommend to the waiter or waitress? They're always going to say the salad. Why? Because the salad costs them $2 to make and they're selling it for like $12. You know, a salad is usually one of the more expensive meals at a lot of restaurants, because they know if you're health conscious, you're willing to pay more so that you don't eat the chicken fettuccine Alfredo at the price of 2,500 calories. So everybody wants a cut no matter where you go. And we want this to be the place where you can get a real unbiased review and really good information.
Awesome. And would you consider that your doodad of the week?
That is definitely my doodad of the week. That's my doodad of the next 2 months, because I'm just eating, sleeping, and breathing that. I have papers just strewn over my desk. You should see it right now. Everywhere, just tons of papers trying to figure out, you know, all the possibilities and your answers trying to get there. It's going to be so cool.
So we're going to get two photos from you, Jim. One of the fracture print and one of your desk currently, right? Done. All right. Right on. Well, I'll leave you with one of my doodads of the week, and mine is actually the Intuos Pro. Some of the students in the photoclasses.com have started asking questions about this, and I started noticing that Jim and Dustin were using a graphics tablet and wondered why. And after picking up the Intuos Pro, or any graphics tablet for that matter, you really start to notice the difference. It has 2,448 different levels of pen pressure points. It has different sensitivities, noticing whether or not you're tilting the tablet, and you can actually do gestures like you can to swipe over things, scroll. It becomes such a useful tool to where you're keeping your hands off the keyboard and keeping your hands off the mouse to get your work done as fast as possible. So I recommend the Intuos Pro. I went with the medium thinking that it was going to be quite small, and it actually takes up a rather large amount of space on my desk, so I'd probably stay away from the large one unless you want to hold a cafeteria tray size something on your desk.
Very cool. And are you using it a lot with like brushes in Photoshop so that you can get that sensitivity, or what tools especially are you using it for?
I'm mainly using it for brushes in Photoshop, and then also for painting more concisely on different effects in Lightroom. I've noticed that in Photoshop, it's even more intuitive, no pun intended, but when you press down with the Intuos tab on the Intuos Pro at least, and you start to paint over or start to mask something out, it's going to go to the smallest point in the center of where your tool is on the brush. And then if you start to move around, it'll go around that tool. So it's almost like it's feathering, but it's making sure that you're coloring exactly where you are. And as you press down harder on the pen, it'll give you a stronger, harder brush stroke. And if you, just like if you're using a pencil, if you just barely graze the top of the tablet, it would actually just give you that nice fine line that you're looking for.
And is it, am I right that they have a tool there, a physical button for changing your brush size?
Yes. There's actually a round circular thing, and it almost looks like the first edition Apple iPod, but you click on that,
yeah,
and it goes through a full menu, and you can wheel around to change your brush size. It works really well in both Photoshop and Lightroom, and you can go through the settings to make the tablet behave any way you want to, and you can change the orientation depending on whether you're a righty or a lefty as well.
Huh, that's pretty cool. I need to jump on that bandwagon. I've used tablets before. I've had a Wacom before, but it was quite a few years ago, and I just found it too cumbersome. I just couldn't get used to it. But I keep hearing people saying really liking the Wacoms. Dustin used one and really liked it, and so I think that's a new project that I need to take on.
And this one's wireless too, so if that's a selling point, I think it cleans up the clutter.
I have a wireless keyboard, wireless mouse. I have a wireless trolling motor on my boat. I like everything wireless, because I have so much technology on my desk trying to podcast and everything that I have so many cords for podcasting that it's like, no more. I can't handle any more cords.
It takes up so much room, and honestly, to clear up one wire off your desk when you have all this going on, it makes a world of difference.
That's right. Well, Darren, it's been a pleasure talking with you and reviewing some of the things we're working on at Improve Photography for all of you. We're hard at work every day making the best resources we possibly can for you and coming out with this podcast twice a week. Thank you all for the download and for supporting the podcast, and we'll see you in the next episode.